Hey, what's going on, guys? So I have a really great show for you today with worldwide fitness expert Ben Greenfield. And I just want to give you a couple of things so you can get the most out of the show because there's so much in here that can benefit you. The first is this. There's a lot of scientific stuff we're going to go over because one of the things we're trying to do with this show is to help those of you who are still in the military and those of you who have gotten out of the military to live your best lives. So we talk about some different things you can do to really kind of block some of the issues that come up after military service. You know, a lot of times, even though you're moving around, you're exercising, you're PTing, you can run into a lot of different types of health issues because, especially in the combat arms, the lifestyle isn't entirely healthy. So we talk about a lot of things that can help to protect you, especially while you're out in the field. We also talk about a lot of things that are related to veterans who have gotten out and things you can do. So definitely take a look at the show notes because I'm going to list a lot of the things that Ben talks about. On top of that, we also talk about some other awesome things as far as living your best life. And for those of you who are hunters, talking about fitness related to hunting and how to become a better hunter. So all this is a really packed episode. It's not the longest episode, but it's really packed with information. So I hope you get a lot out of it. And without further delay, let's get into the show. Good afternoon and welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is episode 19 with Ben Greenfield. About 10 years ago, it had been a few years since I had gotten out of the Marine Corps. And I remember while being in, I was constantly PTing, constantly running, constantly exercising, going out to the field, doing lots of things. But in addition to that, I was also chewing tobacco, smoking lots of cigarettes, drinking lots of alcohol. And when we were on deployments, a lot of times I was living off of MREs, which are filled with things like sugar and lots of preservatives. But, you know, like a lot of other people, I looked forward to getting out. I loved the Marine Corps, but I looked forward to getting out and to starting my civilian life. And it started with a lot of excitement. It started with school, and it started with the prospects of a new career and a new life. But as we got on, things started to change. You know, I found myself asking myself, why do I ache every morning when I get up? Why am I having such a hard time staying awake all the time? Why am I having such a hard time putting thoughts together? And why does everyone around me seem to annoy me so much? As I went on through the years, I began to study health and fitness. I eventually became a trainer, but I never really had a clue as to what was really going on and as to some of the things I could have done to prevent this stuff until I came across a gentleman who's on the podcast right now. His name is Ben Greenfield. He's widely considered to be one of the best personal trainers in the world. He has a best-selling book called Beyond Training and one of the most influential podcasts in the fitness industry. And Ben's book is significant because its premise is that triathlon training, which Ben started in, can actually be unhealthy. And a lot of the premises he goes over in this book can actually apply to us. And so first things first, Ben, I really want to thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I know you have limited time, but it's just a real pleasure to have you on here.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. It's an honor. I'm glad you asked me.
Ben, just to jump right in, you know, I read your book Beyond Training, and at the beginning you have a tale of two triathletes. And just briefly, can you go a little bit over why you put that into the book?
Sure. I mean, it's to differentiate the idea between training smart and training training stupid. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's this assumption that if we lift heavy things, run fast, do high intensity interval training, and train with really good exercise science, go deep into the pain cave, beat our bodies up, hit the gym multiple times per week, and just hit it hard every day, that we can eat what we want and that we are somehow bulletproof to a lot of the environmental assailants that we encounter in our especially modern post-industrial era. And the fact is that everything from, constant exposure to cell phones and Wi-Fi to mold to fungus to poor nutrition to toxins in the environment or in our personal care products to lack of sleep to poor digestive health to poor hormonal balance to lack of blood flow to the brain, all of those things wind up, even if we exercise a lot, potentially making us people who are healthy on the outside, right, like fit and strong, but unhealthy on the inside. And in that particular section of the book, what I'm talking about are, two Ironman triathletes, one who is training smart, right, like a lot of minimalist training, high bang for the buck type of exercise protocols that are smartly programmed along with really good nutrition and really good care for the digestive system and the brain and the hormonal system versus that person who just goes out and crushes it for as long and as hard as possible each day and then just eats what they want and lives the way that they want because they assume that the exercise is just basically, gonna cover up any other issues when it comes to their training program or their lifestyle program. And the fact is that, when you look at like a pro athlete, for example, freaking Michael Phelps gets brought up a lot. He eats 10,000 calories a day, or Usain Bolt, dips into chicken McNuggets, all the time. There's photos of this where you'll see him doing that. But how are those guys going to look when they're 40, 50, 60? How are their brains going to operate? Are they going to need joint replacements? Are they going to have inflammation? Are they going to be like half or more of the football and the baseball players you see who, once they retire, Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, look at these guys. They're, fat and unhealthy. And a lot of them have like pre-diabetes and all these issues that they were able to skirt early on in their training when they were young, training a lot, et cetera, but that have now caught up with them. So the idea is that you look at life through the lens of not just performance, but through the lens of performance and longevity and health. And my, what I lay out in that book is that, sure, avoiding, let's say, gluten is not necessarily going to make you faster at a Spartan race, but it's certainly going to make you healthier. And I would say that, if something is going to make you healthier and you can go just as fast, why not do it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing I just want to give you a little bit of insight here. Maybe we could take that tale of two triathletes and apply it here. Going back to the life of somebody in the combat arms in the military today, who's going out to the field all the time. I remember, weeks where we would be, doing a lot of movement to contact, where we're carrying heavy packs, doing long, long humps, living off of MREs, which, you're putting lots of sugar in your body, crackers, processed cheese, things like that. At the same time,
a lot of MREs.
Oh yeah,
I'm not in the armed forces, but I mean a lot of MREs.
Probably dealt with some of the toilet issues that come along with it too. The bathroom issues, but and on top of that, you're getting very little sleep. You're cleaning your rifles all the time, and you use this rifle cleaning fluid that gets on your hands, and that's known to cause cancer. And then a lot of us we dip tobacco and we smoke cigarettes mainly as a nootropic to try to keep ourselves awake and to keep ourselves alert in the situation. For somebody who's currently in right now, 18, 19, 20, 21 year old kid who's not going to feel it immediately, what are some things in your mind that they can do to protect themselves during this period of time in their life?
Sure. So MREs are a reality. I personally quit using them. I now travel when I do like my multi-hour adventure races. You know, I've just got as many clean bars as I can get, and then I'll use like dehydrated meal replacement powders that are healthy, like Ambrodite or Super Greens or, you know, any of these things that you wind up just like mixing with water that sticks your ribs, but that are far healthier than an MRE. But the idea here is that, you know, as far as answering your questions about mitigating the damage, I mean, part of it is removing a lot of the compounds from your body as much as possible. And that comes down to taking care of the liver and the gut. So there are supplements, that help to cleanse a lot of the damage that that type of stuff can do to your biology. One of the ones that you'll see used in the hospital a lot that actually works really well, they'll use it in the hospital for like alcohol poisoning, but it also works for just the average person for their liver and to fight off inflammation is, N-acetylcysteine.
Yep.
It's also abbreviated NAC.
I've got that right here on my desk, actually.
Yeah. There's one called Pharmanac that's really good. There's another one that's very similar to NAC, that it's glutathione. Liposomal glutathione, the kind that dissolves in your mouth, is good because glutathione doesn't get absorbed by your digestive system very well. That's another one that I like. Binders that can bind toxins. Chlorella is a really good one. It's like algae, basically. You can find that in supplement form. You can find it in edible form. That's another one. Magnesium is also very important for clearing and cleansing the liver and the gut. So that's another one that I like. So as far as the gut goes, those would be a few that I'd recommend down that alley. You're gonna run into a lot of cognitive issues and cognitive inflammation as well when you're dealing with, you know, that type of lifestyle. I really like the study that was published in the Journal of Psychoactive Drugs a couple of years ago, done by Dr. Daniel Amen in NFL players, in which they showed that they could reverse brain damage in NFL players. And in that particular study, what they did was they did what's called a SPECT scan of the brain. A SPECT scan is just basically what's called a computed tomography of blood flow to different regions of the brain. And then they gave these guys a neuropsychological test to evaluate their cognitive performance. And then they had them follow this protocol. And in this particular case, what they did was they limited their alcohol and drug use, which, you know, is just kind of like a no-brainer, and made sure that they got enough sleep, which is also kind of a no-brainer. But then they also introduced in that particular study, and they showed reversal of brain damage, like in these NFL players. And that one, they did high-dose fish oil. They did just a basic, like, really good high-potency multivitamin, like a multivitamin with a whole bunch of nutrients in it, not like a crap, like, Costco multivitamin, but like a good multivitamin. Mm-hmm. And then they used some herbs that have been known to actually help with the brain, particularly. The ones that they used were one called Ginkgo, which is also really good for, like, elevation training, Ginkgo biloba. Mm-hmm. They used one called Vimpocetine. And all these are just like legal over the counter things you could buy on Amazon. They used acetylcholine. They used something called acetyl L-carnitine, which is also a really good pre workout booster. They used something called Huperzine A, which is something, you know, like Tim Ferriss talks about that one in his book 4-Hour Body, but it's just basically like almost like a herbal smart drug. And then they use two different antioxidants. The antioxidants that they used in this case were the N-acetylcysteine that I already talked about, and then they used alpha-lipoic acid, or what's also known as ALA, and they showed like a huge reversal of brain damage and a huge reversal of cognitive impairment in these 30 retired NFL players that they looked at in that study. And I mean, you could look it up. I think the full study is free online to go read, like exactly what they did. But that one's called Reversing Brain Damage in Former NFL Players. One other interesting study, because a lot of this stuff that attacks your brain and your body, it's the same type of stuff that tends to cause Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And they did a very similar study that was just like shocking in terms of like reversal of Alzheimer's, which, you know, they don't really consider that led to be a reversible disease. But what they did was they took a whole bunch of people and they began to reverse Alzheimer's in literally elderly people who had brains that were falling apart. And in this case, they did a whole cocktail of things. They did this entire therapeutic system for Alzheimer's. And in that case, what they did was, first of all, they put them on a low glycemic index diet, low inflammatory diet, low grain diet, right? So it was almost like a paleo diet, but they had a lot of plants, and they ensured that there weren't a lot of like sugary, starchy foods. Everybody in the study was doing a 12-hour fast every day. So they would have at least one 12-hour period of time where they weren't eating, you know, like 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. type of thing, right? Everybody was doing some type of yoga or meditation or even music, right? Like relaxing music at some point during the day. Not a ton, but like 20 or 30 minutes a day of some kind of protocol that didn't involve a hard workout. That was just like yoga, meditation, music, stuff like that. They got everybody on 8 hours of sleep a night. In this case, they were using melatonin, just small microdoses of melatonin to help these guys get to sleep at night, these men and women get to sleep at night. But that's another one that they threw in there. They used a lot of similar antioxidants and nutrients, as I just described with that study that they did in the NFL. But they also used like a high-dose curcumin. And then they also threw in one called bacopa, which is like an herb used for cognitive enhancement. They used high-dose DHA, which is, you know, very similar to high-dose fish oil. And then they used a bunch of what are called mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols. And that would be the stuff that you get from, like, blueberries, green tea, dark chocolate, red wine, tea, like any of these, like kind of tannin-rich foods. So they had a whole bunch of nutrients like that. And then they also had them – they're upregulating their ketones in this case by giving them a whole bunch of coconut oil every day. So okay. They were getting like 2 or 3 tablespoons of coconut oil every day to amp up ketone production and get them on like higher fats, lower carbs. And then the last thing that they did with those folks, you know, I mentioned things to help with like liver toxicity like N-acetylcysteine and glutathione. But they also did a metal detox with them. So they put them on like metal detoxification because heavy metals are also one of the things that can cause like Alzheimer's and cognitive decline and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. And that study, if you wanted to go read it, that one is called Reversal of Cognitive Decline, a Novel Therapeutic Program. And that appeared in an aging journal, but it was done at what's called the Mary Easton Center for Alzheimer's Disease Research. And even in people who don't have Alzheimer's, it's really, really good for anybody who wants to, like, reverse, like, cognitive decline or damage to the brain or even, like, TBIs, concussions and stuff like that. Like, all this stuff works for that kind of stuff too.
Awesome. And I'm going to include all of these supplements in links to different products here in the show notes. You know, and a lot of what Ben's mentioning here, it seems to be related to metabolism and how we process nutrients, how we process sugars in our body, and how it relates to inflammation. Am I correct, Ben?
Yeah, exactly. So a big part of it is shutting down inflammation, controlling fluctuations in blood sugar, and then introducing things that increase blood flow.
Awesome. Yeah, and these are things that you can include, say, you know, if you wanted to take a pill organizer or something like that and stick that in your gear before you go out to the field. There's definitely some field expedient ways to do this. As far as workouts go, Ben, you know, we touched a little bit on, less long, death march workouts and things like that and more shorter, intense workouts. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. And before I jump into that, you know, like you mentioned, like logistically, you know, obviously, like, you know, popping a billion pills is not necessarily logistically that feasible, especially when you're out in the field. The way I've done it in a lot of my races and multi-day competitions is I'll kind of follow that 80-20 rule and just like find like, you know, certain supplements that have cocktails of a lot of the ingredients that I just went over. Like one of the ones that I'll use, you probably heard me talk about this one on a podcast before, like Tianqi.
Yep.
It's just like one packet of a whole bunch of adaptogenic herbs that contains like 80-90% of what they used in those studies. So that's one that I'll use for something like that. And when I combine that with like something that I can use as a replacement for an MRE, that works pretty well. It's just like a 1-2 combo that's easy to travel with and stick in a bag. Yeah, and it's all just like powder, so it's not going to go bad, or, you know, if it gets it's in a packet, right? So if it gets wet, you don't have to worry that much about that type of thing. As far as exercise goes, with the high intensity interval approach, you know, the idea here is that if you look at the world's best endurance athletes, especially, they spend about 80% of their time in like low level conversational aerobic cardio. Like right now, when I'm talking to you, like literally, I'm walking on a treadmill right now, and it's at a very, very slow pace. It's conversational, it's aerobic, but you'll see athletes doing that, you know, all day long, and then they spend about 20% of their time in really, really high intensity, like pain cave interval training, like 100 to 150% of their VO2 max, like super duper hard, but very, very little time doing just like kind of like medium intensity training, right? Like hour long slogs, you know, of running during lunchtime, or like getting on a bike and pedaling, you know, kind of hard, but kind of easy, you know, just, you know, basically what would be called like black hole style training is what I call it in the book. But training that exhausts your muscles' glycogen levels, but isn't so hard that you're actually sucking your lungs or getting super fit. Mm-hmm. That's a really crappy way to train versus spending a lot of time just like on your feet, engaged in low-level physical activity, not planting your ass in a chair for too long a period of time, you know, doing the kind of things I do where I'm just like, you know, walking on a treadmill, moving, trying to stand my feet all day. And then the icing on the cake is you just go super duper hard when you do lift or when you do your high-intensity interval training where you're doing, like, you know, like let's say a Tabata set where it's just 20 seconds as freaking hard as you can go, 10 seconds easy, 20 seconds hard, 10 seconds easy, and you just do that, like, you know, 8 times through, and that's your workout. And a lot of people think that that's bull, that you can't get fit doing that type of stuff. The people that think that usually haven't actually tried going hard enough during those high-intensity intervals. Like, right now, I had one workout yesterday for 6 minutes.
Wow.
And my lungs are still burning from that workout. In that case, it was basically I had a harness attached to my waist, and the guy I was training against had a harness attached to his waist, and we just basically pulled each other for a good 6 minutes, just like back and forth as freaking hard as we could go, and that's it. That was the workout, and I'm sore and beat up from that, and, you know, and the rest of the day I was just walking, moving around, just getting stuff done. But, you know, that's it. And this morning I woke up and I did 100 burpees, right? That's probably because today's a pretty busy day for me. I got to go to the bank and get a bunch of stuff done. And, you know, I got to drive around and all that jazz. A lot of times I'll just do something like that. And, yeah, those 100 burpees sucked. Like, I was total pain cave during that time. But it's just like it's in, it's done, and now the rest of the day I'm just low-level physical activity, right? So that type of training actually works really well. And, you know, I'm always amazed at, you know, guys who go to the gym for like, you know, whatever, 2 hours a day and just kind of crank it out, but don't go that hard, don't go that easy. It's just not a very efficient way to train versus really, really hard dips into the pain cave for brief periods of time, and then everything else is like aerobic, easy, conversational, but physically active.
Yeah, it's really amazing to think about it that way. I used to own a gym in Long Beach, California called Metroflex Gym, and that was a gym where I don't know if you ever heard of like CT Fletcher or Mike Rashid or any of those guys, but a lot of those big YouTube bodybuilders came out of it. And We used to do these like 2.5-3 hour workouts, and my brain afterwards, I could not think all day long. And ever since, you know, leaving that gym and I moved out to the country, I've been doing a lot more shorter, intense workouts. And some of those Tabata workouts, they're insane. as far as what they can do to your lungs, what they can do to your conditioning, and how hard they can be. But my brain just feels so much better. I feel so much, I have so much more energy during the day after a workout like that, as opposed to like a 3 hour long, iron workout where I'm squatting and then doing leg presses and things like that.
Right. Exactly. No, I'm a fan of those type of like brutal workouts, like literally like once a month, once a month I'll do a workout that just scares the hell out of me. But, for the most part, you don't need to do those workouts as often as you think. That's a problem is like a lot of people just think you got to keep doing those. But I mean, like if you do a good workout like that one or two times a month, like that's all you need for those big, voluminous, intense workouts. And then after that, it's just, recovering and allowing your body to soak up and absorb all that fitness.
Awesome. And also, as I've heard you mention before, you don't necessarily need a treadmill desk, but one of the things you can do that's inexpensive is to keep like a kettlebell next to your desk, or, even just do some burpees every hour or something like that. Is that something you suggest?
Yeah, I mean, so what I have here in my office right now is a heavy bag, a pull-up bar, and then my treadmill, right? So I can just, like, stop throughout the day and do certain activities. I was working out. I travel a lot, and sometimes I'll find myself in a hotel room for ungodly periods of time, conferences and stuff like that. So I travel with a suspension trainer. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm an author, and so I write. So I'll do a Pomodoro technique where I'll write for 15 minutes and then I'll stop and I'll do 20 burpees and 20 inverted suspension pull-ups from the suspension trainer and then just go back over to the computer and keep writing. And so I'll like go on like a 3 hour writing stint where by the end of that 3 hour writing stint, I mean, you do the math, right? Like I've done 240 burpees and 240 suspended rows and written for 3 hours with that Pomodoro technique. So that works really well too, is those like little mini breaks where you're just like doing super duper brief, body weight type of exercises or suspension type of exercises and then getting back to work. So I kind of like that type of technique too.
Awesome. I know I want to be really respectful of your time here. I wanted to just touch on a couple of other things. How old are you right now, Ben? 35, I think.
34.
And you've got two twin boys, and they, I know they have to be a handful. For some of the older guys who have gotten out and who, they're working full time jobs, or maybe dealing with family things. As far as scheduling things out and scheduling family time and making time for work and making sure that you have time to work out. Are there any techniques you'd suggest for that?
Yeah. I mean, as far as making the time to work out, a big part of it comes down to like what I just described, right? Like thinking of the workout as not being something that you necessarily have to like carve out time to go to the gym and spend an hour to do, but instead just like injecting those small bursts of activity throughout the day. So that by the end of the day, you've done a whole bunch that's added up pretty well. I'm also, a big fan of figuring out ways to make activities that you were going to be doing anyways harder, right? Like, so in my car, I keep a hand grip trainer and I keep these things called expandable hand bands that allow me to do like grip training and hand extension. Captains of Crush makes some really good stuff. And then I keep a power lung in my car, which is like a device that I can breathe really hard in and out of. So while I'm in my car, I can do hand grip strengthening and lung training. Another thing that I'll do is, when I ruck or, when I hike basically, like with my kids or with my family, I'll, throw a kettlebell in my backpack and sometimes I'll even wear an elevation mask and just turn it into a tough workout, right? Like a hike I'd be doing anyways, I'll just turn it into something a lot more difficult. And figure out ways to take things that you'd normally be doing and make them a little bit harder. I'm a big fan of that. I'm also a big fan of doing things that don't seem like they make you fit, but they do, like cold showers, right? You get a bunch of nitric oxide produced. You actually burn a lot of calories when you do that. So I just never take a hot shower ever. Like I take two showers a day and they're always just icy cold as I can go for about 5 minutes. And that's really good at actually allowing you to burn calories and build nitric oxide without necessarily devoting yourself to a full on workout. And then if I could tell you one more, what's another one that I do? you know, probably another big one that I'll use, and this is going to sound dumb, but every time I go to the bathroom, you know, take a pee, whatever, I do 40 air squats, you know, so every day I've done like hundreds of squats. So I do that kind of stuff all the time. And all it means is that I can stay pretty fit with really minimal amounts of exercise, you know, and I compete against guys, you know, professionally in obstacle course racing and stuff who are at the gym for literally like 3, 4, 5 hours a day. And I'm working out for 20 minutes a day and beating these guys because I just have so much low level activity just built in throughout my day. So by the end of the day, I've just done a ton.
And that's awesome because it also builds longevity into your routine where, you know, you're not constantly abusing yourself, but you could probably do this a similar routine all the way up into 60s, 70s, and 80s, right?
Years old?
Yeah.
Oh, screw that. I'm talking like 150 years old.
Oh, nice, man.
but yeah, I mean, I sound like I'm in jest, but I mean, like, honestly, if you take care of your body, there's no reason that you can't live a pretty freaking long time feeling really good, you know, and there's some centenarians out there who are over 100 years old, and if you look at their protocols, you know, they're active, they've got a lot of love and relationships in their life. Mm-hmm. They're drinking a glass of wine every day, they're eating real food, or, you know, drinking raw goat's milk, or, you know, just like eating food our grandparents would recognize, and they're not like doing some brutal hard workout every day. They're just like low level physical activity all day long, eating real food, having a lot of love and relationships. Most of them have some kind of like meditation or prayer or something like that present in their life. And I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things that you just have to kind of make mild lifestyle adjustments to achieve.
Yeah. My Aunt Lillian's 108, and that's her to a T. She
awesome.
Has all those things. You're also an avid hunter. And I know a lot of our listeners are into hunting, and you do the hunting competitions. Have you been able to work hunting into your routine, or what do you do to prepare for a hunt, and what types of physical activity have made you better at hunting?
Yeah, I just got back from a hunt over in Colorado, and I'm heading up to BC in a couple of weeks to go hunt moose and bear up there. You know, hunting's, you know, it's tough, right? Because a lot of times you're cut off from your technology and your work and all that jazz. And I mean, like, so here's the deal. First of all, I hunt hard, right? Like, I've got a heavy pack on. I move hard. I cover a lot of ground on foot. And so, you know, hunt for me a lot of times is, you know, a hard workout. You know, a lot of times on the hunts, I'll bring a suspension strap. So back at camp, I'll be doing, you know, inverted rows and pull-ups and stuff like that, kind of working some of those muscles I'm not working when I'm just, you know, rucking. And then, you know, as far as the training for it goes, a lot of times when I'm shooting, I'll shoot, but I'll shoot during a workout, right? So I'll put like, you know, three 3D targets, right? Like a standing bear at 20 yards and a deer at 40 yards and a bedded elk at 60 yards. And, you know, what I'll do is I'll shoot the deer, drop and do 5 burpees, then shoot the bear, drop and do 10 burpees, shoot the elk, drop and do 15 burpees, sprint, grab each arrow, sprint back, and I'll have a heavy sandbag there. I'll do 10 sandbag overhead presses, and then repeat that sequence, right, for like an AMRAP, right, as many rounds as possible for a half hour. You know, and so a lot of my hunt training, what I'll do is simulate a scenario where your heart rate's going to be high. I mean, if you've called in a bull or whatever, and even if you haven't been, you know, running or rucking, your heart rate just goes up. Mm-hmm. So getting used to shooting when your heart rate is high, and even turning your hunting workouts into actual workouts is, in my opinion, kind of a fun way to train. So those are some of the little ways that I work it in. But yeah, I love to hunt, and that's a great workout too. You know, assuming we're not talking about, you know, whatever, standing in a tree stand over a pile of corn.
Awesome. Just to finish up here, you know, you've had a lot of success, and you know, you've worked your way up to a really awesome place in the fitness industry. For some of the guys out there who are looking to maybe get into the fitness industry, maybe, you know, eventually run their own online training programs and things like that, what do you suggest for those guys who, you know, as far as getting started, what they should be reading, what types of literature they should look at, and as far as how to start their careers?
I don't really recommend. I mean, I'm a voracious learner, and I recommend always, you know, reading the Journal of Strength Conditioning Research and subscribing to, you know, reviews like the Examine Research Digest and Alan Argon's Research Review, and reading websites like, you know, like my website or the Subversity website or, you know, fitness.alltop.com or any of these other things that allow you to stay on top of your game. But, I mean, honestly, I trained my ass off for a decade running brick and mortar personal training studios and just like for 8, 10, 12 hours a day training people, right? Like everybody from soccer moms to CEOs to professionals, triathletes. And I mean, that's really my recommendation, is get out there, put in the work, see as many people as possible, learn how to do functional movement screens, learn how to do exercise tests on people, learn how to use blood lactate testing equipment and VO2 max equipment and high speed exercise cameras, and, you know, like really learn a lot about the human body. And my number one recommendation to people is not to be the Instagram Snapchat trainer who's right, like Snapchatting photos of yourself with your shirt off and you know, getting clients. Or I mean, get out there, put the time in the trenches. Like that's what a lot of people make the mistake, is they're like, oh, I'll write an ebook. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the way to become an excellent trainer. You got to get out there and like put the time in and actually, you know, be flesh and blood with people in the gym, training them for a long time before you get to the point where you can, like, you know, start doing more stuff on the internet, for example. So my recommendation is just get out there, put your nose to the grindstone, and work hard. I wish I had a magical answer for you, but the answer is, start seeing people and see a lot of people.
That's an amazing answer that I think a lot of people need to hear, especially in the fitness industry as it's been in the past few years. If there's one piece of advice that you could leave all of our listeners with from the veteran community who are seeking to, you know, live their healthiest, most optimal, you know, best lives, what would that be?
One tip to live your ultimate best life. One little thing that I do every day when I wake up in the morning is I whip out a journal and I journal. What my system is I write down one person I can help or serve that day, mm-hmm. right? So one person I can just go out of my way to help. I write one thing that I'm grateful for, and then I write, you know, for me, I read the Bible every morning. So for me, I write like one biblical truth that I discovered, like something that inspired me that day. And just like starting off the day with a habit, a routine like that, that's really positive, and that sets a stage for you to be aware of other people's suffering or ways that you can help other people, be aware of some type of greater story for your life or spiritual power, which has also been shown to be associated with longevity, and to be aware of something that you're grateful for, in my opinion, is a really good way to start the day, and a great way to just like keep yourself grounded and grateful, and also tapped into the things that are the most important in life.
That is absolutely amazing, and it's something we've talked about before on this podcast, and it's awesome to see somebody like you who is so successful practicing that. Ben, I seriously want to thank you so much for coming on this show. You know, your knowledge, your insights have helped me immensely over the years. I know this is the first time we've ever talked, but, you know, I've been following you for quite a while, and you've had a huge impact on my life. And so I want to thank you for it. And I know you're going to have a huge impact on a lot of people by coming on to this show. Where can people find you? Where do you hang out online? How can people get in touch with you? And how can people follow you?
Yeah, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com.
Awesome.
That's easy as that.
Awesome. And the best podcast I've ever heard as far as health and fitness goes. So,
thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben. And we're going to sign off now. But for all of you out there, thank you so much for listening. And we will have the show notes for this episode up on the website. And until next time, I'll talk to you soon.